This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 6 February 2021. Another day, another dollar. Okay, so it's Friday today, right? And I'm joined by Wong Shoning, I'm Chuang, and Philip C. Now, this day is notable for two reasons. First of all, it's the third day of the Lunar New Year. I think the Metal Ox, right? Metal Ox Year?
Are we into the third?
Yes, third day already. It switched over on the 4th, I think.
So I was confused.
I've been watching the Feng Shui talks, okay? And the second thing of note is the fact that due to the latest announcements, we can't have the reunion dinners at home. But guess what? We can have them in the Pasar Malam.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Or at the hairdresser.
At the barbershop, yeah.
Or grocery store, actually,
or grocery
to be fair.
Store, yeah. Your nearest 99 Speed Mart.
I didn't know that. I in my mind, I thought that the Lunar New Year kind of starts like on the day.
No, it doesn't.
You know what I mean? On the first day of CNY and that would the new year start. No. Okay. Yeah. All right. But later, I'm sure you're going to read all our fortunes, right, Chuang? Since you're into, like, you've watched
countless
feng shui shows.
Yeah. If you're a rat, a rooster, a dog, I think you're good.
Okay. Monkey?
Tiger?
Monkey?
Monkey, I think, is all right.
Okay, few.
Not to say I know a lot. Yeah,
and
been
for tigers?
Yeah, you're a tiger?
Yes, what do you think?
You mean the astrological
tiger?
Yeah,
of course.
What I know, the rabbits are no good. The boars are no good. I can't remember. I got to go and check. I've been listening to Joey
you are
and
so
Kenny.
Sorry, but you're
I'm useless.
Yeah, when it comes to astrology.
Do the research and then we will basically have the conversation
but
next week.
If you are interested in terms of, astrology and what feng shui will be like this year, you can tune in to The Property Show. They're doing a special Chinese New Year edition. Tune in at 9:30 a.m. for that.
Kenny who? That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, that will be interesting, I think, if you're interested in this kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, I'm always interested in that kind of thing, Wong. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. But we have other things on the show, right?
That's
not,
right.
Not
yeah.
just feng shui.
Such as?
Yes, Philip, what's on the dock?
Well, we have an article from Bloomberg about China cracking down on fake divorces to stem the real estate surge there.
Oh, sure.
Interesting.
Quite unlike Malaysia, where the property market is completely moribund. But that's just
regardless
of
divorces or marriages.
Regardless of divorces, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we will be also going through the international headlines, especially Joe Biden in the White House and talking about his foreign policy.
Yeah, and pulling out on time. Mm. Yes, all that and more to come. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was U2 with One. I'm Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Wong Shaw Ning and Philip C. It is 6:07 in the morning. Now, cryptocurrencies, specifically Bitcoin, is at $37,500 per Bitcoin, right? No thanks to Elon Musk, who has been tweeting furiously about all kinds of publicly traded assets, including shares of,
GameStop.
GameStop, yes.
Etsy,
CD Projekt. His tweets have been moving the markets and has drawn the ire of regulators and the powers that be.
It's not the first time.
It's
Remember,
not the first time.
He's a serial tweeter. And he's done it even with his own company. But maybe not a tweet. I think it was something he said. Whereby
he said he should take it private.
Yeah. And then the SEC is like, hello, you can't make these announcements, right?
Okay. So this thing smells of hypocrisy, right? Because it's basically one influential person's tweets sending the markets awry, yeah? What makes him different from a central banker or a prime minister or a president who tweets and then sends the markets into awry? It makes me think that there's, that saying, right? Rules for thee, but not for me. Do you know what I mean? That one, right? It's a bit like GameStop, right?
Well, I beg to differ slightly because in the first place, I would actually like to say that presidents, prime ministers, whatever they say is policy, right? That's the truth, isn't it? I mean, it's a policy. And so their statements, be it on Twitter or a press conference, have to be very carefully worded. But unfortunately, we had, and I'll put that in past tense, we had someone who didn't follow those
Who's
rules.
Who's that, actually? I can't remember.
I just think about it and I see the color. I don't know. I see the color orange. But anyway, that was the case, right? So,
yes.
I don't know.
Right. And in that case, he was removed from Twitter, right? We're referring here to former President Donald Trump. At the tail end of his tenure. But 2 days ago, Elon Musk told his 45 million Twitter followers that he's stepping away from the platform for a while. So just came out only 2 days ago.
He's been doing that
This is not his first time, to be fair. He said it before. So this is another repeat of that. I think he's feeling the pressure of people kind of being scrutinizing his comments a bit too much, I think, in the
past.
He's
been on the platform for ages, right? And yes. He's been in and out. In and out. Like a bar door. So, but he's been an influential guy on these platforms for a long time. But you see, this is bad. This is hypocrisy, right? It's a bit like that GameStop phenomenon where, if the retailers and the day traders make money, it's bad. Billionaire hedge funds make money from the same activity, except in a different direction. It's good.
What do you think the solution is? The solution is what? If he does stuff like this to censure him, or Twitter should say, okay, sorry, you can't access your account.
The whole significance of democratization of the investment world is that you make up your mind, right?
Mm.
If Ben Bernanke says something, you have a right to do what you want. If Janet Yellen says something, it's up to you. If Noor Shamsia says something, it's up to you to react accordingly. If Elon Musk tweets something, it's up to you, right?
So in other words, you don't believe in any kind of enforcement action or regulatory censure on him?
Well, that's why the public markets are public markets. Lah.
Mm. But the issue here is that then you're right. Then in the sense that it's up to you as an investor whether you want to believe him or... But the problem is...
You make up your own mind.
But there's always this balance, right, between paternalism and free markets. Okay, so you want to protect some investors who may not be so savvy, who unfortunately, like even this GameStop incident might have been dragged into it, thinking it's still going to rally. And like we know last night...
They dropped 80%.
Yeah, so they were the last ones, catching the falling knife.
Yeah.
So how do you balance this, protectionism, paternalism versus free markets? Because not everybody is going to be savvy, Chuang. Not everyone's going to say, I know this guy is talking nonsense. I'm just going to ignore his tweet.
Well, the problem with nanny states is that they create snowflakes, right? And snowflakes never learn.
A little bit of that is true, but I do think that we can have somewhat of a balance. So perhaps, like a statement from the SEC saying that, be mindful of comments like this. And is he making forward-looking statements is another thing.
Well, where do you draw the line with the forums? Because Twitter is not different from Reddit or it's from Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. It's not
how
different.
Do you draw the line? Correct, it's going to be very challenging. And in the case of Noor Shamsia or Ben Bernanke, they had public roles. And what is his public role versus his private individual role? That's a big question mark.
Actually,
for me.
There is some sort of example, and that is the example of Warren Buffett, but not on the Twitter platform.
Yes.
So Warren Buffett, when he buys a stake in a company, now under normal circumstances, under normal rules, the investor, anyone that is a significant investor, the announcement has to be made immediately. Okay. But Warren Buffett is given 5 extra days to do that. Because the argument is that when someone like him buys it, it will move share price and then it will create volatility. So he's given a special exemption. So I think
why he gets special privilege and other people don't?
Because they don't want people to react immediately to what he does. And they say it would, it's basically creates ripples in the market. So he was given this special exemption. Now, whether these kind of things need to apply in the new world in terms of the Twitter, social media, I don't know.
And the challenge with Warren Buffett, I believe, is he plans it, right?
Yeah.
It's all kind of orchestrated. Whereas Elon Musk,
it's
can't
just
control
random.
And
it's like random, right?
That's the challenge with Elon Musk.
Yeah, don't you think this topic is kind of like an essay discussion that you might have, like an essay question?
A PhD thesis.
Yeah. Capital markets module under your PhD thesis. Should there be more oversight of influential billionaires? Discuss.
I don't know about... Well, do let us know.
What you think.
Send us your PhD thesis.
Send us your PhD thesis and zip it first. WhatsApp 0187898899 BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was the Raconteurs with Steady As She Goes. Obviously sending a message to Elon Musk. Steady on, Elon. Steady on. Enough of the tweets.
Stop it.
Stop it.
Okay.
Stop it.
Yeah. Okay, Friday morning. Which means that we've got to talk about people and making money and China. From Bloomberg Wealth, the story. I think Shanghai and Shenzhen have imposed more rules to rein in speculation. The problem with those two cities is that people are getting divorced. And in fact, they're filing fake divorce papers so that they can buy more properties.
Yeah, and why are they doing this, right? Because Shanghai properties last year grew 30% year on year.
Crazy. Yeah.
And this is not a new thing because this is a trend that Shanghai is following from other cities like Hangzhou and Shenzhen. So in the past, right, most Chinese cities limit home buying demand by capping the number of properties owned. So in Shanghai, you are allowed to own 2 homes. But there's a new rule where the number of homes owned by people who have been divorced for less than 3 years will be counted based on the total that they had when they were still married.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean? So basically, if you're divorced, you can buy more properties.
Yes. Well, you have a 3-year grace period, essentially, where you're still classified as married.
Okay.
Then after that, you can go for gold and buy as many houses as you want.
I see. So many questions, so little time.
So basically, people have found a way to game the system exactly. Like at the end of the day.
Chinese people will find all manner of...
I think people.
I'm not Chinese people, China.
Yeah, but I'm sure people are in general.
But it's only happening in China, right? It's happening in Singapore as well?
Yeah, they game the system, but in a different way. And this is with regards to HDB housing, because the Singapore government, of course, it's much subsidized housing, public housing in Singapore. But you need to make sure that your income isn't above a certain level in order to be eligible to buy these houses. So what I've heard from some of my friends is like, let's say I'm a couple, I'm married, and my household income is more than $10,000. So I'm actually not eligible to buy HDB. By the way, I'm not sure whether it's really 10,000. I'm just using that as an example. So what happens is that one of them will actually quit their job. And suddenly the household income will be halved, right? Assuming each earn 5,000. So suddenly, hey, I'm eligible to buy this HDB household house because my household income meets the threshold. And then they file their papers, they quickly buy everything they need to buy, and then the person goes back to the old job, like as soon as it's done.
You know, these bubbles, they've been forming for the last 10 years, you know. When these bubbles pop, it's going to be horrendous.
I don't know. Okay, for Singapore, when with regards to HDB housing, I don't think there's a really bubble. I mean, you know, it's controlled. But let's say China.
Yes. Banking system in China. Where are these guys getting the money from?
The only thing is, we've been talking about this hypothetical bubble bursting.
Bubbles.
Yeah, for the last 15 years, and I've yet to see it burst. That's the amazing thing.
That's the problem.
Well, I feel China is a big problem, and this bubble is a real bubble.
Yes.
And there are creation of these ghost cities happening already in China.
Yes.
And the classic example of a ghost city closest to home is Forest City in Iskandar.
Yeah. That build it and they will come kind of theory, isn't it?
But it's now empty. And if you go there, it's really like a ghost
town. Actually,
you
don't even need to go to Forest City. Sometimes when you drive around in KL...
Some of those buildings are empty. They will never be occupied thanks to COVID.
At night, you know, the light should be on, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's evening, the lights are on and you drive past and you can count the number of lights on and you're like, huh? You mean this block is only like, what, 10, 15% occupied?
I get flabbergasted because I used to go and I was thinking of buying a property and like they tell me it's all sold out. I'm like, really? Who's buying all this property here?
And then you go,
Chinese people.
It's Chinese people. And they have busloads from Taiwan, Japan, Korea coming here to just... unleash and unload their liquidity and cash.
Yeah. You know, we make a lot of, we do a whole song and dance about how Donald Trump, he expanded the Fed balance sheet by, what, $8 trillion in his tenure. We don't really discuss what China did. China's stimulus was incredible as well. But because it's China, you don't really know, right? Otherwise, how are you going to get this much capital in the system in China? There's two banking, the conventional banking system, and then you got the shadow banking system. And some say that the shadow banking system in China is bigger.
I wouldn't be surprised.
If that bubble pops, it's going to be...
I don't disagree.
It's going to be like that Michael Jackson song, you know, Blood on the Dance Floor.
But that's why the Chinese government is quite mindful of it. They have tried their... I think, to be fair to them, they tried to put up restrictions. So even things like, you know, in 2016, for example, in China, they raised the down payment threshold to as high as 70% to pool property value, okay?
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. Imagine having to cough up 70% of a property.
For you, no problem, lah, Wong.
But they will basically...
We're on radio, you can't see my eye rolls. Yeah. But I was desperately rolling my eyes at Chuang. But anyway, the thing is, at the end, you think, yes, there's no liquidity. No, where is this money coming from in China? But the reality is you're talking about a country with a population size of 1.3 billion. And household savings rates are still very high. The other thing to remember is that they don't have that many investment options like the Americans or even us. Because the liquidity is trapped within China, it doesn't really get a chance to exit.
That's why Forest City was created, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's actually a challenge for them to find ways to get money out. One of which is, you know, they go and invest overseas property. But that's a relatively new thing. Mm. So for the longest time, with so much liquidity trapped in the country, it flows into one asset class, which is property.
What bothers me a lot is this trapped liquidity will come to Malaysia.
It did a little bit. I'm sure
it will come later, right? It's the natural trend because, as you see, they're cracking down in China. And I'm thinking later, what about Malaysians, especially the urban poor? How are they going to climb up the property ladder later? And that's, for me, a million-dollar question when you have these outside investors coming in to prop up prices artificially?
Yeah, I just get the sense that the people who are buying these properties in Shanghai, Shenzhen are the 1%ers or maybe the 2%ers.
Yeah, right? And there's 1.3 billion of them, right? Yes. So the 1% is a lot already.
Yes, and one person with all these billions can own 10, 20, 30 properties, right? The great unwashed will become even more unwashed in the wake of all this capital and liquidity in the system. Why? Because if you don't have assets to collateralize at basically very low interest rates, you can't expand your wealth. If you're living from day to day, hand to mouth, right, on a salary, which is hardly enough to get by, you can't make it.
I think the question is, how do you balance this? Because you do want an internationalization of your property market. I'm not saying it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But you still need to provide affordable housing for your citizens who need it. So, of course, it's that question mark that that governments need to think about.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell us what you think if you want to weigh in the conversation. In the meantime, Paul McCartney with Ben on the Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Ray LaMontagne with Three More Days. In fact, Three More Days takes us to Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is another working day. Boo!
We don't want three more
days. We don't want three more days.
We want the next 2 days to go extremely slowly.
Yeah.
So we can enjoy
Saturday
the weekend.
Morning.
Yeah. Hey, oh, that's your peak.
My peak is Saturday morning.
His peak weekend is Saturday morning.
I wish I had 12 hours Saturday mornings.
Peak glee, Saturday morning.
Yes.
My peak glee is Friday evening.
Okay. My peak glee is reading about Joe Biden. Because why? It's not Donald Trump.
Good one.
Okay, his first major foreign policy speech, Joe Biden said that US will end its support for the war in Yemen. In other words, he's pulling out.
Oh,
good news,
okay.
Right?
Good news.
Less war, more love.
Yeah, because I think the US has supported the Saudi-led coalition fighting the Houthi rebels in Yemen. So that's a big reversal. And also, how is he going to manage MBS, Mohammed bin Salman?
Mm. Oh, yes.
Jang.
But honestly, when you think about it, right, the Middle East is very...
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a very challenging thing. I mean, foreign relations there are extremely fraught. And if you look behind the scenes, even within the Middle East, there's clearly, you know, factions, right?
There's so many layers.
But yet, everybody needs to be nice to them because they produce oil. So what to do? And the region has always been volatile.
Well, that's why there's a whole point about moving to renewable energies. But back to the Middle East, it's such a complicated place. You have Palestine and you have Israel, you've got UAE and Qatar, you've got the Shia and the Sunnis and Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's just...
A complicated
mess, essentially, there.
Yeah, it is not easy to navigate. But what has happened is that Biden announced that he's appointed Tim Lederking, seasoned Middle East diplomat, as his new special envoy to Yemen. And this came on the back after the White House suspended arms sales to Saudi Arabia and UAE. Now, it's the first significant signal from Biden that he intends to reset this whole relationship with the Arab regimes. If I remember, Mr. Trump, on his way out, actually...
You call him Mr. Meh? Just call him Trump, lah. I love that.
I'm actually trying to be a little bit sarcastic, but never mind. Mr.
He's
Trump.
To add some
yeah,
respect.
Mr. Trump.
Ah.
Actually, if I was really respectful, he would still be called President Trump, because that's what they call all their old presidents,
right.
But I didn't. But... he actually, on his way out, if I'm not wrong, actually agreed to some arms sales. So I don't know whether all that's going to be rewound.
Yeah, don't you see the hypocrisy of the US administration? They sell the arms to the Middle East and then they send their troops in to go and fight the war in the Middle East. It's nonsense. It's always been nonsense, which is why I'm quite glad that Biden has pulled these guys out of Yemen, which also means that if he's spoken out on foreign policy in the Middle East, he should at some point in time, hopefully sooner than later, say something about Asian foreign policy. Right,
well,
because
you know,
they pulled out long time ago when that, you know, Carrot Top came in.
Carrot Top. You're going to hear this word a lot, which is strategic patience, i.e. do nothing lah.
I do nothing like
that. Or I do when I feel like doing.
Yeah. So it's observing to see what's happening. And it's true, he's notably quite absent about China. He hasn't really said anything specific on China. With respect to the Myanmar regime, he's already made a statement that they're reviewing sanctions. With respect to EU, there's already some conversations on NATO, Middle East, but China relatively quiet.
I think everybody's playing their cards close to their heart.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody's like, China's like, okay, let's not say anything. US also, let's not say anything. You know, because this is really going to be, I think, the difficult diplomatic relations, the one that really, really counts, right? Yeah.
I wonder whether he'll be forced to say something after the BBC report where they did say that the Uyghur camps were, detainees were alleging systemic rape there.
But I won't be surprised if he makes some general statement. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. One of those general statements where we condone this, we don't approve it, please release it. But actually, when you drill down, it means nothing. Or there's no subsequent action. Because
smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, you can just say, oh, you shouldn't do it. And then nothing.
Yeah.
There's no consequence of that statement, right?
No, because it's Chinese New Year, Joe and Z are playing Chua Tai Ti, right? They're just, you know, they're just like passing, right?
What a great analogy.
Jermaine.
How apt the analogy.
And for those who don't know what Chua Tai Ti is, it's like...
Big two.
Yeah, it's a bit like, it's a card game.
Yeah, we don't know how many twos Joe has and we don't know how many twos Z has. So we'll find out soon enough. Okay, speaking of Trump and the carrot top, actually, Trump is facing an impeachment trial. He's the only U.S. president ever in history to be impeached twice in his tenure, and he's only been aware one term, right? So he's facing this trial in the Senate next week on Tuesday. House Democrats requested for Trump to testify, but Trump is saying no.
Yes, he's accusing the Democrats of a PR stunt. Right.
I'm giggling because
isn't he the biggest PR stunt of all?
Exactly. I mean, this is the man that like was the judge on The Apprentice. I thought he likes publicity. His whole life is
any
one big PR.
Publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, isn't his life one big PR exercise? I don't know. So now he has the ultimate one, and he doesn't want to show up. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, look, I mean, so what happens? If he's impeached, what happens? All the skeletons out of the closet get pulled up and then he goes to jail?
I think the main thing is that he can't rerun. He can't rerun in 2024. He can't put his name up as a candidate, as a potential president. That's the consequence of the impeachment, which is why...
Is it? Yeah, because they have come back, haven't they, these people?
Yeah, so that's why in 2020... That's why apparently some Republicans, although they'll never verbalize this... want this impeachment to go ahead because they do not want to see him as a presidential candidate
even
for the Republican Party.
I think the Senate, however, in the last vote, voted very majority. The Republicans were not in favor of the impeachment, though. So
you need 17 people, 17 Republicans 17, to move to the other side to get to the two-thirds.
But apparently, they only hit 55 in total.
Well, we'll see. I don't think anything is going to stop Mr. Trump at all.
Yeah, okay. Well, not much has stopped him in the past, right? 6:45 will
even
come back
Melania
after this. Even Melania frowns. Okay. 6:45 in the morning, we'll come back after this with social media and local news. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, now Stray Cats with Rock This Town. Not to be confused with Alley Cats, which is from Malaysia. Did you guys ever watch Alley Cats? They had the most amazing hairstyles.
Yes.
They're not even
the
hairstyles.
The minute you mentioned that image of the singers.
Afro.
Yeah,
right?
The afro.
The afro
that can
touch the ceiling.
Exactly.
Bunch of machas playing the guitar, like, you know what I'm saying?
But they were really cool.
They were good,
I mean, they are cool. Footstrong.
Yeah. Okay, so social media? Any social media? No, nobody's talking to us? We wish they would. Why don't you talk to us? We're nice people.
Well, really? Are you nice?
Maybe.
Sometimes. When I'm not being nasty.
They're busy playing Choi Tai Di Chuan.
Probably.
In time for Chinese New Year, right?
Okay, good news. According to the newspapers, the T20 have been taking out their money from the ISINA EPF thing, right? The scheme, to buy gold on stocks.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
Okay, but...
Not fantastic. Actually, it's a bit weird, right?
Why do they need to take it out?
Because they think they can do better than EPF.
Maybe, they think they can generate returns more than probably 5%? Is that what they think?
They think they can, I guess, right? If you bought GameStop, you would have made 400 million, 50%.
Provided you bought it at the right time, you sold it at the right time, and you didn't buy it yesterday and lose 60%.
And you were informed.
Okay, interesting data there, though.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the Singapore... Hey, let's talk about our Malaysian SOPs first.
Yeah. That's really good news.
Yeah,
right?
That's really good news. The fact that we can celebrate a reunion dinner with our families, but I thought every night we have dinner with our families anyway, but never mind. Never mind. Okay. And there are some pluses, one of which is, of course, the barber hairdressers can open as of today and they can stay open until 10 p.m. Car wash centers are also allowed to open. But sadly, I think retail for fashion still closed, right? And still no dine-in. No changes to the 2-person per car rule, I believe. And of course, still no interstate travel for all of us. So yes, it's going to be a bit of a subdued Chinese New Year, I think.
I think the noise coming through yesterday on Twitter sphere was about the reunion dinner, about whether or not family members within the district, and I think they were quite clear. Hmm. So the challenge I have with the announcement yesterday was, quality of the announcement cast aside that, it's the timing of it, right? And there are three issues for me. First issue is, it was quite a simple SOP. So why didn't you announce it earlier with the MCO extension? That was for me, number one. Number two is it's timed with our prime minister going to Indonesia. So it really doesn't sit very well in my view.
Yeah, and gentlemen, right?
It doesn't sit well. And then third one, which is for me quite sad, I feel, is I expect a U-turn. And if you do the U-turn, there's no space for us to adjust our planning if there's a U-turn happening. Because I can see a lot of people not happy with these SOPs. Rightfully or wrongfully, you have to follow them.
Yes.
But I anticipate a U-turn, and this U-turn will eat into my weekend planning for the upcoming Chinese New Year.
Well, I'm also a bit confused, you see. Like, when it comes to what is the definition of a household, right? For a lot of us, a household means, like, for me, right? Does it mean my parents who don't live with me but I consider part of my household? Does it extend to my siblings who also like are part of the household but don't live with my parents? Because honestly, there's 13 of us, and you know it's quite difficult for all of us to be in one physical house, right? So what is the criteria here? So does that mean that I will have to eat my Chinese New Year alone because I live alone?
Quite and
that's
possibly,
considered
yeah.
that's considered one household. So do I just go and buy McDonald's and have that reunion dinner by myself?
Right.
Which is, when I think about it, a pretty sad kind of outcome for me, right? But so that's why I want to know, what is the definition here?
I have to say the ones who are impacted the most are the older folks.
Yeah,
because they're really looking forward to the grandkids, to all of us together. We younger buffaloes, we kind of will make
okay, call yourself a buffalo. Thank you.
Well, my mom calls me a big buffalo. So, but the point is, we will just adjust. But my heart goes out to the older folks.
Yes, yes. Especially if you think about it, the older folks who are in a small town, and for them, Chinese New Year, it's a really huge thing, right? You get all these relatives coming back. But I know that we do need to really reduce the COVID-19 infections. That's the reality. And sadly, this Chinese New Year, people will have to make sacrifices. There's no way around it.
Yeah, that's why I checked the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and they reclassified CNY as not Chinese New Year, but celebrate next year.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I do want to highlight this article from the Singapore Straits Times.
Yay.
Yay. You know, I love to look at the Singapore Straits Times.
No,
this one is a bit more frivolous. It's from Natalie Tan, and it's about what you should do during Chinese New Year. And apparently, one of the things you do not do is to lay out trays of CNY goodies. Practice strict hand hygiene during these visits.
I disagree with that.
So you can't, like, you know, pick away at all those. The highlight of CNY is all those snacks, right?
Yeah.
And apparently, you need to find a way to.
Can't you just each one give a fork and they can do what
I
want
don't
to do?
Know. Singapore is Singapore, right?
Did you ever used to get sick eating that onion biscuit? You know, the kacang, right?
Uh-huh.
Salt
throat.
It's so much. Yeah, it's salt
throat. The mandarin oranges, like, combine.
100%, man.
Yeah. But that's the best thing about Chinese New Year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the eating, it's the getting together.
Yeah, so this year I've wrapped my angpao already. Instead of putting money, I put face mask inside.
You will not
no,
be...
No. We were having a discussion just now, and Chong is going to come, and he's going to give us nice big fat angpaos.
Of course he is.
That's without doubt.
Without a doubt. And on Malaysian Reserve, I think sadly this is one thing that I would like to highlight. And it's that on MCO 2.0, we are seeing rising reports of domestic abuse, guys.
Yeah.
You know, there are consequences of this, the fact of this kind of and more enforced lockdown.
As is the fact on the H Financial Daily as well. I think impaired loans are at a 9-year high. So obviously these are all by consequences of the COVID. The other by consequence that's happening is Tommy Thomas's book.
Mm.
His memoirs have been drawing all kinds of flack and criticism. He's even had a few police reports made against him, including from the former, including the former Attorney General.
Yeah, I saw like yesterday a lot of commentary from different people. Nazir Razak
came
even
out.
The succeeding preceding DG also making a lot of statements.
I think we should invite Tommy Thomas here and talk about why he wrote the book. You know, because obviously it's quite
the invitation is open.
Yeah, Tommy, Tan Sri Tommy, to me obviously. If you're listening, come hither and speak.
And very quickly, another person that's been on the Breakfast Grill and announced the start of his party, Muda Syed Saddiq, his bid for a judicial review has been dismissed. So he can't set up his political party. I wonder what's the next step for him.
I wonder why. Okay, 6:56. We'll come back after this with the markets and more business news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.